Ever make a financial decision and later wonder, why did I do that? Maybe it wasn't logic that drove it. It was emotion. Today on Money Sense, we're talking with Asia Evans, financial therapist and author of Feel Good Finance, about how to recognize emotional money patterns and make decisions that actually serve your life and your values. Welcome to Money Sense, where we have spent over 30 years helping people plan, not just for their finances, but for their whole life. Hi, I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for Ellenbecker Investment Group. We're helping you make confident decisions about your money, your health, and your legacy. Asia, we've had an opportunity to talk in the past, and one of the things about, for me, being a financial advisor is that many times I feel like a therapist. I'm not licensed therapist like you are that have all the deep background, but emotion plays such a huge part in making financial decisions, and sometimes it's not just the emotion that we're experiencing, the roller coaster ride that we have in the financial community, but it's the emotion that we bring to the table from our past experiences and things that have happened in our personal life. So what drove you to doing this? Because you do talk about that you had your own awakening. And the other thing that I've learned, too, is with that awakening, there's such a deep energy that we hold on different things. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for having me. It's so good to see you again. So I have been a therapist all of my life. I made that decision very, very young that I wanted to be in mental health, wanted to be a therapist. So I knew for a really long time. But I did not make the decision to specifically niche down into like a subject matter until I realized the deep rooted connection between money, mental health, emotions, psychology. And that came about through my own experience. As you were saying in my bio, I had my own financial awakening. And that was probably about 10 years ago. I was living in New York City. At the time, I was making more money than I ever had before, which is sitting kind of around the national average. Of what people make, and this was about 10 years ago, I thought I was going to be rich. I thought that I had all of the money to do all of the things that I wanted to do with all my friends, whether that was go out to dinner, go shopping, have a nice apartment, keep my car in the city, pay off my student loan debt, all of the things at the same time. And I quickly realized that that was not feasible. And it wasn't happening. And honestly, and I talk about this a lot because I think that we don't share the emotional side about money enough, is that when my, friends and counterparts who worked in advertising or worked in different industries were 100% making more money than I was, and they could do things that I just could not afford to do. And I was upset and I had FOMO and I felt bad about myself. And I felt bad about myself, not just because I couldn't afford to do it, but I felt bad. Like, why can't, like, I'm making a lot of money. Like, what's going on? I just did not understand. And by way of going down that road and really digging into myself and really getting honest about, hey, Asia, what's going on? How are you seeing yourself? Is your self-esteem slipping because financially you can't keep up? And I was like, yes. For me, it really was. I felt bad, not just about not having the money, but I felt bad about myself because I couldn't financially keep up. And that really spurred this kind of quest to understand why we weren't talking about this enough. I was like, there's no way I'm the only person who has felt this way, and we need to get louder about it.
So the big word that comes up to me is shame. And it's like carrying a backpack of rocks on your back. And I think many people would think that just because you have a lot of money, you don't carry shame. But I see people who have a lot of money. And one of the things that happens is because they've had this history and there hasn't been a path to talk about it. Mm-hmm. When they get to this retirement age and they have more money than they could ever spend, they can't spend the money.
Yes. Yes.
And so it's not when you're talking about you were at this point where I didn't have any money and I couldn't figure it out. The other thing on the other side of the fence is people with so much money, and I work very hard to try to help them to understand that they can spend money.
Yes.
So I'm sure that you've seen that as well.
Yeah, this is a huge, huge part of my work and what comes up a lot. And I say this because I was, you know, in my 20s going through that. And I'm so glad that I did to be able to start really understanding my relationship with money. And thank you for bringing that up, Karen, because I don't think people understand that financial therapy and being emotional about your money is not just something that is saved for people who don't have enough or people who want to do more with their money. There are a ton of people who are extremely wealthy, but have a lot of complex feelings around their money. And I think the way our country tends to look at money and finances in general, it's kind of like, oh, well, if you have the money, everything's great. You should be happy. There are no problems. But as you're experiencing with your clients and as I experience with mine, there can be a shame of having a lot of money. There's a lot of shame for people who are wealthy and they're not sure who they can trust because they may have gotten burned in the past, or what it looks like that you've saved your whole life to create this amazing wealth retirement in your retirement. And now you don't know how to spend it. And that comes up. And I talk about it in my book as well. After a friend's father came up to me, was like, Asia, I've been working for 30, 40 years of my life and now and saving and squirreling away. And now you just want me to spend it. I'm like, Yeah, I do. I want you to go on that trip to Napa you've always talked about, or go abroad to the different places that you have always wanted to see. Like, yeah, now is the time. You worked so hard. Enjoy it. But that's very hard to do when you've been saving and trying to make sure that you were a little bit more risk adverse for a long time. And now you're just supposed to flip a switch and spend.
Well, and Asia, just to set the tone of what our discussions are going to be today, there's also that passing the wealth down to their children, who the children and often don't know what their parents have because they've been so and all of a sudden they inherit this money or they inherit a piece of property. And I hear this all the time, or a particular stock. My dad worked for that company. I'll never sell that stock. And they get married to different concepts without really understanding where that energy, that emotion is actually coming from. And can you talk a little bit about that? And then also talk about how can people visualize this difference of therapy and how you can work with not only an individual, but you can work with a family to pass wealth down in a very healthy, productive way.
Yeah, definitely. So let's start at what is financial therapy? Because for some people, this may be a new term, a new idea, a new concept in general. So financial therapy really is looking at how your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors interact with your relationship to money specifically. And a lot of that is coming from your life experiences, how you grew up, how money was talked about, how money wasn't talked about, certain narratives and money beliefs that you've had growing up. And my job, specifically me, because there are financial therapists who practice very differently and are more on your side of the coin, who are doing the advising work, but to your point, have, you know, are sitting across and have to sometimes hold some of the emotions that comes up when they're talking to their clients. My job is very strictly on the emotional, behavioral, psychological piece. I'm not moving anybody's money. I'm not touching their money at all. We're just talking about the feelings connected to it. So that can kind of help set the scene for people around what could this look like. So I'll give you a few examples. So I have seen couples who are both coming from wealthy scenarios, and they are trying to navigate a prenup. They're trying to navigate what it looks like for them as a couple, as well as managing some of the pressures that they may have been getting from their family, and try to make sure that they are connecting to each other in love and in the basis of their, you know, their marriage, so that they can just navigate this in a very comfortable way. So that's a beautiful example of what you talk about when you're saying, hey, you're not just going to a therapist if something's going wrong. The best time to go to a therapist is when you're like, hey, let's check in. What can I continue to do to maintain my health, to maintain, you know, my emotional fortitude and not get stressed out? You do not want to be going to a therapist when you're in crisis. You can, of course, but let's get a little bit more proactive and start seeing someone and building that connection before you are, you know, in the trenches of life.
When you were speaking, it really resonated that what a beautiful thing to do if it's a second marriage, because you're dealing with all those emotions of the kids and wanting to, you know, who's coming in, who's going to get the money, how are you going to do that? So I would think that that would be a fabulous thing as well.
Yes. And that's a perfect example of when a financial therapist may be able to help you navigate some of the wealth transfers that might be coming up, or you're looking at legacy planning or wealth estate planning just in your lives. Like, how do we come together to make sure that our adult kids are okay and taken care of, because that's important to you, but also making sure that your new spouse that you are potentially marrying for the first, second time, whatever it looks like, also feel seen and heard, that you two can build a financial life together that feels fair and honest and still loving together. And sometimes that means having a third party, somebody like me, to just kind of navigate and piece together the parts of your stories.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group. If you're looking for a trusted partner or ready to elevate your financial plan, you're in the right place. With multiple Better Business Bureau Torch Awards for ethics and integrity, Ellenbecker combines expertise with a team member you can trust. Meet our advisors and explore financial resources at ellenbecker.com.
Asia, I just welcome you to the show again. And I told you my little story about the difference between a husband and a wife. She was thinking she was saving money by cutting coupons. And you know how old it is now. And he was thinking, I'm working so hard and there's no money in the bank. And they just couldn't come to terms. And they were actually at this point of, he was so frustrated that I don't think I can be married this way. And It that clouded everything. It clouded all the good times. It clouded all the good stuff, because money is that type of an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what comes up when you shared that story, which I think is very common for people, is a few things for me. I'm like, how often were they looking at the money together? How often were they talking about the money together? And it sounds like, at least on his side, he did not feel safe. So that's a big thing when it comes to finances, especially when you're in a couple, is that the two of you may have a different level of security. The two of you may require a different level of savings, retirement, whatever it is, to feel like you are safe and secure in your life. And to me, him saying, hey, we're not saving any money, I want to see the numbers in the bank account, she's like, well, what do you mean? I'm saving you all this money through these coupons because I'm not paying full price. Where both things are true, right? Two things can be true at the same time, but it doesn't mean that they're getting to their goal in the same way. And it sounds like they needed to have a serious conversation around, hey, what does saving look like to you? Okay, noted. This is what saving looks like to me. How can we both make sure that we're getting our needs met and we feel secure in what we're growing financially? So to me, I'm like, this is a quick solve. We just need to have a few conversations, come up with a different plan and a different system. But to your point, it is so difficult to talk about money because it's emotional, because we're talking about vulnerability. We're talking about how much information about money you may or may not have, and how that can really feel bad for some people. It can feel very vulnerable to say, well, I just don't know about these things, and that makes me uncomfortable. And especially when you're in a couple, that can just be really difficult. And I always encourage my couples to give each other grace and to remember that you're there because you love each other. Now, how do we figure out what you both need and want to feel comfortable?
And it's really developing and continuing that pillar of trust.
Yep, 100%.
Trusting that each of you understands and is willing to, I don't want to use the word compromise, but is willing to negotiate and talk about the different scenarios. And I do remember and have a client who, he came home from school one day and he found that his parents had moved and never actually told him. They were kicked out of their house. And he sat on the front stoops until his parents came and found him. And he has carried that fear of losing his house. And so he truly hoards money.
Yep.
And talking about those issues is so difficult. And that's really what you're helping people do, is to, I want to say, we always say, unpeel the onion.
Yes.
And, and get to those deeper feelings that drive. Because the thing that happens, and I know you've talked about it last time, is that when allowing these emotions to sneak into your everyday life, as simple as negotiating a raise or a contract or anything.
So many different reasons, right? Like,
yes.
Money is uncomfortable. Money is taboo. You don't want to say it. It is vulnerable. It is also bringing up so much history, to your point of some of the stories you just shared. Those are really painful moments for people, and sometimes very traumatic moments for people. And it's very emotionally charged why they're doing the things that they're doing with their money. So yeah, I can imagine when people take the time to say, hey, this is my price, and somebody else is trying to like cut a deal with them, you're like, this is it. Like, I actually don't want to be bothered with this. Like, it is what it is. And some people may be like, oh, it's okay, that works. But to me, if that person was sitting in the office with me, I would be asking them, like, what happens if you don't get the deal? What happens if you don't even ask for the deal? Why is it necessary? Like, what are you getting? What does it feel like you are trying to do by getting the deal? And I'm sure that comes from some place that started a long, long time ago.
Yes.
And it makes sense for them. But this is the kind of interrogation that I really want people to start asking themselves. Hey, what's going on? Why do I do that? Why do I have this pattern of behavior? What am I trying to get to?
How can people start noticing? And as a couple, how can a couple help each other to understand and notice some of those consistent things that happen that maybe get people off track?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one, I would say, please look at your money. Look at your money. Yes, when you're with your advisor, very important. But also look at your money on, at the very least, a monthly basis. And if you're single, do it on a monthly basis, if not more. If you're in a couple, do it on a monthly basis, if not more. So it may look like a money date, right? To just say, hey, how are we looking? Are we spending on track? Is this kind of in keeping with our average? Are we below anywhere? Are we above? Are we going over our budget if you have one? That's going to be the first thing for people to start recognizing. Oh, you know what? We really eat out a lot. This week it went up, and last week it was up, and last month it was up. That's going to allow you to start seeing the patterns of your behavior, because you're going to see it in the numbers, right? Like, you'll see, hey, I'm constantly doing this. The second way to check in is to see how you're feeling, right? Let your feelings guide you. Are you constantly feeling this way? Are you feeling uncomfortable? Do you feel great every time you get paid? Like, what's going on for you around your feelings, not just the numbers? And let those two things consistently help you understand what you're going through and tracking the patterns of behaviors that you might have with your money.
What about the spouse that feels, my spouse doesn't share with me information? I feel dumb. I don't feel like I understand it. I'm certain that you work with people that are feeling like that. How can a spouse like that have the courage and the desire to work with that spouse and say, I want to know if something happens to you, I don't want to be a turtle on my back,
yep,
feeling like I don't know who to trust or what to do. I find that to be a really big issue with couples coming in. And it's not like sometimes one doesn't want to share. Sometimes the other spouse just doesn't want to know.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with the example of a turtle on your back. This is a big concern for me as well. Both parties of the couple need to know what's going on with the money because of exactly what you said. What happens if something happens to your spouse and they know where all the accounts are? They have the passwords, they have access to the accounts, but you don't have them. Nobody wants to be going through navigating a crisis, a tragedy, grief, any of those things, and feeling like, oh my goodness, I'm in this really bad position because I don't know what to do with the money. So in the midst of the grief, you're like, where is the money? How can I access these funds to make sure that my spouse is taken care of, or, you know, if we have to set up certain things? So this is why it's going to be important. It doesn't mean that you need to be diving into the numbers every single time you go over them, but you do need to understand some of the basics of what this looks like. So when it comes to gaining the courage, it is self-preservation. I want you to be okay if anything happens. So that does mean that you need to know. And if you don't want to know, who do you know that you might be able to also count on? So it could be an adult child. Let's learn together. How can I help you? And I would say too, to the spouses who may be listening, how can you encourage your partner to get involved too? Like, hey, let's learn this together. I'm going to teach you. Or do you want to watch this quick video through, you know, only content creators that we trust and know what they're talking about? Please check credentials. Very important. But hey, do you want to read this book, providing resources? Or if you do have an advisor, have a separate meeting and just say, I don't even need to be at the meeting. We're not even going to go through the numbers the same way. Let's just talk about the money things that you might need to know to be able to navigate our funds in the right way. So there's a lot of ways to go about it. I would say start slowly, and you don't need to know everything tomorrow. I'm not expecting you to become some expert day trader. That's not what we're trying to do here. What we're really just trying to do is make sure that you feel comfortable navigating your money.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
My guest today is Asia Evans, and she's a board-certified therapist, speaker, and writer, and she has written a great book called Good Finance, and we are talking about the emotions behind money. And part of that, Asia, I think, starts with just making sure you got the right people in place.
Mm-hmm. 100%. We want to make sure everybody has the right team and feels comfortable. And honestly, I actually have a client right now who is navigating looking for a new advisor as well because she didn't feel comfortable. And this is very, very common, unfortunately, especially in heterosexual marriages where sometimes the woman doesn't feel comfortable. She doesn't feel like the advisor is actually talking to her or including her. And I want to speak to both spouses and advisors who may be listening to just say, if you find that there's one person who is always talking in the meeting, that you are not asking the other person or asking the other spouse or looking to the other spouse for their thoughts or opinions, that is a red flag. That's a red flag for the advisor. That's a red flag also for the spouse. You want to make sure that people feel seen and comfortable in those meetings. You may be asking them different questions, but it's going to be important that everybody feels like they know what's going on and that we can slow the meeting down if necessary to make sure that everybody is on the same page.
And again, you used that word before, safe, mm-hmm. feeling safe with the information and understanding, because it really is important that someone takes the time to educate you. And you make the decisions. They don't make. You make the decisions. You know, Asia, the other thing I just want to mention is that we have found that if we talk to people more about cash flow than budget, budget is one of these words that sort of sets people off. But every successful business has to have adequate cash flow.
100%.
And if you look at your investment portfolio, or you look at that and you think, this is my business that I'm building for me so that when I retire, I can earn income off of this business that I have built, which is their portfolio of investments, whatever they are, whether if they own housing or they own real estate or they own investments, kind of looking at that idea of people sitting down and say, what's your cash flow?
Mm-hmm. Please, it's very important. And it's so unfortunate that budgets have such a bad rap, you know, like I feel like, and I've said this before, I feel like they need a new PR campaign to just say like, budgets are not bad. You're right. It's just your profit and loss. It's just your expenses and your income. It is just understanding how your money is moving in and out your own financial system. But unfortunately, the second we hear budgeting, it sounds like restriction. Somebody's going to tell me no. They're going to tell me I can't. I'm like, no, they're going to tell you you can. They're just going to tell you that, hey, you said you didn't want to spend this much money on this anymore. So like, what are we doing?
When you're talking to parents, do you have this opportunity to help them guide their children? And I know we encourage family meetings here, and we're going over estate planning and we're going over portfolios. And I found that a lot of people really don't want to talk about their money because they don't want their kids to know how much they have. But you can have a family meeting without saying how much money you have, but just to lay a strong foundation. So do you work with families in that way as well?
Yes, and probably will be more in the future as it kind of continues to ramp up. We know that there's a huge wealth transfer like in the midst. This is like big, big news for people and kind of what does this look like to transfer that wealth. So I have a lot of feelings around people not wanting to share what's going on with the money. Now, I understand maybe not wanting to share at certain ages, it makes sense, but and the concern about having your kids grow up entitled or feeling like, hey, they're not going to have a work ethic or they won't develop a work ethic because they know that this money is going to come to them. However, the flip side of that coin is they have to be prepared to manage that level of wealth, whatever it is. And if you don't either tell them, start teaching them, start building financial scaffolding and information and them learning about how to manage the money, you could, you know, one day pass away, pass down your wealth, and then they have no idea what to do with it. And then your wealth may not outlive them, which I'm sure is not the purpose. But they have to know how to manage it and how to live their life and still, you know, work if you want them to work or not. But there's got to be a level of trust and there's got to be a level of letting go as well. And not right in the beginning, but eventually. So this is why it's so important to have these conversations early on so that you can continue to build the scaffolding around, hey, what is our family legacy? Not just my legacy that I'm passing on to you, but what do we want our family's legacy to be?
You know, Asia, and I'm just going to talk a little bit about estate planning here, that there are families that have children or spouses that have different medical issues or addictions or things like that. And if you are sitting on a money, and we really want our money to have a positive impact on the people that we love, it's so important to go and speak to an attorney and to be open with the issues that you're facing in your family, because there are ways that you can pass money down and still protect it so that children don't have access to it, but they have it there in the sense of need for housing and different things that they have. But so many parents, I find, are afraid to tell an attorney or tell their advisor. You know, I have a son who has this addiction, and they worry constantly about this child getting money, but they're afraid to have that a voice around it. And so they worry their whole life about it instead of going to an attorney that they trust, someone that they trust, and having that conversation and then putting in place the right structures to protect that child. And now the bag of rocks is off your back because you've dealt with it. But there's still this issue around money in our community and addictions and different things. There's so much shame around it that it stops people from making the best decisions that they can.
100%. And, you know, shame and mental health and the stigma around it, you know, this is this has been long term. This has been a long relationship between the two of like, hey, we don't want to share what's going on. We can't even plan appropriately because we don't want to share. And I would hate shame or a stigma to keep somebody silent in a way that is not helping their family, in a way that they're unable to really take care of their family when they can. It does just take a level of vulnerability to kind of reach out to the next step, right? And have the help to make sure that you have the correct things in place.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together. Asia, what can people do who are listening to you today? And people say to me all the time, it was as if you were just talking right to me. What can people do if they want to reach out, or if they want to start a practice of practicing some of the things that you do? How can people take that first step? Because sometimes it's the first step is just the hardest, but the most important.
All right. So what I think people can really do, one, and we talked about this earlier in the episode, but please, please, please look at your money. Right? financial avoidance and money avoidance is probably one of the things that I see the most, but you cannot avoid it. We all need money to live in some way, shape, or form. So just having a good understanding, even if it's broad, of what's happening, what it costs for your life a month, what's coming in, what's coming out, that's going to be really important. The second step that I would say for people is to just be aware about your own feelings about money. Right. So sometimes that might mean, hey, let's take, you know, quick 15 minutes. Let's journal a little bit around your feelings around money, looking at your relationship to money in general. And then ask yourself, do I have any patterns that I do not like around my money? What do I tend to come up against over and over and over again that I'm a little bit uncomfortable? And then I would say is a great time for resources, right? So Feel Good Finance, my book, out now. You can get it in any store that you like. You can get it online or go to a Barnes and Noble, whatnot. That is going to give you the path of starting to understand your relationship with money. It is going to bring you through your childhood. It's going to bring you through some of the money narratives that came up in your life. And then the second resources that I would say is going to be really important is if you are one of the people who feel like they don't know enough around money, starting to look at how do you find that information? Where do you get that information to learn? And armed with those things and asking yourself those questions, I feel like you are going to be off to the races on making sure that your relationship to money looks healthier and that you feel financially well.
Can we talk a little bit about the emotion of money in terms of stress and how stress impacts our health? And money is one of the top stressors for people. So I don't think that I saw an article just recently. It says, what if we could cure cancer by eliminating stress?
Hello, could people do it? That is a conundrum and a great question. Here's the thing. Stress is pretty awful for us. It's awful for our bodies. It's just really, really bad. There's nothing else, no other way to put it. So I'm talking about, and you're right. So the American Psychiatric, American Psychological Association, APA, they are consistently rating money as one of the top stressors for Americans. And that is not good for our health. We are not designed to have chronic stress. So this could be, it impacts our mood, it impacts our sleeping, it impacts, stomach issues, whether that's stomach aches, IBS, any of that. It can impact your sex drive. It can impact how you show up in the morning. Did you get enough sleep? Are you cranky? How do you show up when you're at work? How are you eating? Appetite? Are you eating more? Are you eating less? So it pretty much is impacting almost all systems in our body. High blood pressure, a lot of these issues are coming from chronic stress. So, and we also know that if you're uncomfortable in your body, if you're in pain, that also creates more stress, right? So I really, really encourage people to be more mindful around how much they're stressing about things and if they need the support to help them kind of move through some of these stressors. When it comes to money, there is a plethora of people, of supports to help you kind of work through it. And then having somebody like me, a financial therapist, who's going to be able to potentially guide you through some of the money stress you're feeling, but also figure out, hey, how is your mental health doing while we're doing this as well? And what other supports might you need while you're going through it. So yeah, I agree. Chronic stress is really, it's really hurting us bad.
Asia, what about individuals who just can't figure out when enough is enough, and they work and they work and they work and they have more than enough, mm-hmm. and they aren't working out of joy. They're working because they can't get their arms around when is enough enough.
Yeah. That to me is about like them as a person. Right? Like, what's going on? What are you trying to have your work, your life, your money say about you? Like, what are you trying to get to? And that's one of my favorite questions that I ask my clients a lot. Like, what do you want? So somebody who is completely overworking, no, enough is not enough. They want more. That to me is more centered around their ego and kind of their self-esteem and how they see themselves more than it is. Like, do I have enough money? And here's the thing, like their whole identity could be wrapped up in what they do for work as well. And that's really hard. And that can be particularly hard when it is time to potentially retire and to get into something else or to move on. So that can be really complicated for people. But that's why it's so important to make sure that you have hobbies and things that you enjoy. Life cannot only be about work and only in the pursuit of more, because there's always going to be more. There's always going to be bigger. There's always going to be next best trip. There's always going to be something. So I really encourage people to stop and think about, what are you trying to get to? Like, what is it for? What is all of it for? And that is some deep work, right? That does take time, but hopefully we'll get to a place where you can kind of figure out your enough number. I encourage people to figure out their enough number as soon as humanly possible so that we're not working the way that you're describing right now.
Asia, do you talk to people about the value of time?
Yeah, I mean,
in relationship to money, because people value money more than they value time, and you can't get time back.
Yeah, time literally is our most precious resource. It is not renewable. Like, that's it. Once the time is gone, it is gone. It's not renewable. So I encourage people, it's the first money book I read. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. Your Life or Your Money, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. That was the first money book that was recommended to me that I read. And that started kind of the wheels turning of, a lot of times we are trading our time for our money, and that's okay during some points in our career and our age, it's appropriate, but there has to be an end in sight. And life, while amazing and beautiful, and work can also be a part of that amazing and beauty, we also do need to make sure that we enjoy living it and that we are living it and that we're finding things that are meaningful to us. And that is hard as well. So yeah, I do talk about it a lot. Time is our most precious resource.
One of the things that I learned and have been focusing on myself is that every time I say yes to something, I'm saying no to something else. And taking the time to say, what am I saying no to? And you know what? Almost always it's something that's good for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I put myself on the back burner. And I think that that's another important thing when you're, it really gets down to money. It gets down to your work. It gets down to understanding who you are, what you want, what's important to you, and really understanding when enough is enough. Because every time we say yes to something, we are saying no to something else.
Yep, 100%. I couldn't agree more.
So we're at the end here. How can listeners learn more about this? How can they connect up with you? Are there things that they can do to start this process? They've listened to what we're saying, and they're saying they're talking. Both of them are talking my story. Where do they go from here?
Yeah. So I would say first is, if you want to continue doing this work and the wheels are turning, you're like, oh yes, this is me, definitely pick up Feel Good Finance, because I am going to prompt you to kind of dive deeper in it. There are a lot of reflection questions. I want people to start really interrogating their truths and figuring out what they want and how to get there, whether that is about, hey, what is my enough number, or what do I want from life, or how do I build a financially well life in general. If you're like, hey, I want to dive in with somebody, the Financial Therapy Association, or FTA, has a directory of financial therapists and advisors who do this type of work. People like me who are more on the emotional behavioral side, as well as financial professionals.
What should they ask? What questions should they ask when they're looking? What would be an important place for them to start?
Yeah. So a lot of different providers have consultations, right? I know I do. They provide a free consultation sometimes, where it's just like, hey, let's dive into what's going on for you, right? Like, so be prepared to talk a little bit about yourself and why this felt like a good time. I would ask them about their credentials, because you want to make sure that you're seeing the right person. I would ask them about their philosophy, because to your point, you want to make sure it's a good fit. You want to make sure that you're going to feel comfortable. And that's really, really important. That is kind of one of the first things I talk about with my clients. Hey, this is how I like to operate as a therapist. This is how I show up. If this is not something that you are kind of into, that's okay, but it's more important for you to find somebody that you're going to be comfortable with than I'm worried about you like hurting my feelings because you don't Like, my style's a little different. So asking about their style, their approach, their philosophy, you could potentially run through some scenarios with them to just kind of gauge, hey, how would they respond to some things like this or like that? So all of those things could be helpful, but definitely credentials and definitely making sure that you'd feel comfortable. And is this somebody you can feel like you can open up to?
And if they want to contact you, do they go to AsiaEvansConsulting.com, or is there another way that they can contact you?
Yep. You can go to my website that you just listed. I'm sure it will be in the show notes as well. I am also on social media. So if you are, you know, scrolling on Instagram, you can find me at AJAE Therapy, 1Y, because I recently had a scammer. That stinks. So it's AsiaE Therapy on Instagram. You can find me there. Right now, I'm not taking on new clients because I am full, but I do share other resources on Instagram or social media. Feel Good Finance, you can order it from there. And I have a lot of people that are in my network who are doing this work. So I'm happy to help you if you need it.
Her book is fabulous, Good Finance. And I would definitely grab that. Asia, thank you again for being our guest. I just love having you on the show. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.